been over a month and several delays and unforeseen complications since. We're back, Purple Dinosaur Podcast, episode number 33, the Larry Walker Memorial Edition. We have to hold this one up because this is going to be the greatest that any of us have ever seen of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon alongside Anthony Matheson. Hi, Anthony.
Oh, hello.
How's it going?
Oh, you know, it's all right. I'm glad that we're finally getting the people what they want.
Give the people what they want.
Which is what we're all about here at the PDP. We have had nothing but people saying, when is this new podcast going to be out? You know, you guys are jerks. Why don't you give me new podcasts? Like, I'm going to go live in your bathroom until you give me a new podcast.
Yeah, I like that we just, like, teased people with podcasts, too. This is
like all the time.
It's like three different times we were like, hey, podcast coming tomorrow, and then it never happened.
Are podcast blue balls a thing?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Why not?
Just
blue,
checking.
Blue casts. Shut up. Hey, we have started a new thing with the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Today, our open song is a band called Low Peaks covering the song Sugar by Maroon 5. They are the first entrant. Nick Stevens sent them in for inclusion in the 33rd episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Big thanks to Nick. Big thanks to the guys with Low Peaks. They can be found on Facebook, facebook.com/Low Peaks Band. They also have music on iTunes and Spotify. And, yeah, they're our first go-round in, we're going to start playing some music that is not, like, rights-free, terrible music from freeplay.com. So, we'll have a new sound
on.
From week to week. I know, so sports ball. So sports ball, yeah. That song.
It was a really good sport ball song, but hey, you know, sometimes you got to graduate eventually.
So what have we even, like, what have we missed? We've missed a lot, I think. It's been over a month. It's been, like, 5 or 6 weeks since the last podcast. We're going to get back to doing, I don't know, maybe, like, bi-weekly podcasts in the next month or so, and then we'll start going back to weekly toward March and April.
Yeah, that'd be the plan.
But, yeah, we're just, like, doing a production meeting on air. I don't know. When do you want to do this again? Know.
Well, in the A-Blog, let's talk about, yeah. I do enough of that every single day. I don't need to do that on my day off.
The the fun thing about us being able to do it is that we are our own bosses for this free podcast. So
yeah, we are.
You go to your palatial studios and your giant office complex with your security and your underground parking garage with Donovan McNabb and LA, and then I'm just recounting the things that I remember from my trip to Los Angeles. And then
Donovan McNabb while you were here.
He drove past me and your lovely girlfriend while we were in the parking garage, and I was like, yeah, that's Donovan McNabb. And he drives a Jeep Wrangler, which I find he was in the NFL for 45 years. Wouldn't you get something as a little bit more pricey?
He's not really one of the ostentatious sort.
I guess not.
Fun celebrity sighting I saw this week, sitting in our little courtyard we have there on the lot, John Mayer.
Homer Simpson. Oh.
John Mayer.
John Mayer. He's still alive.
John Mayer was there. And the week before, I saw Alec Baldwin eating a sandwich. He's very hairy.
Is he?
He is quite hairy. His arms, everything, yeah. Because he's always wearing a suit when you see him on camera or anything like that, usually.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
No, yeah, he's a very hairy person.
He's a scary guy. I find him hilarious, but he is, like, terrifying.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I don't run across many celebrities here, but I did see, a few months ago, Hannibal Buress just,
oh, nice.
Like, I was getting ice cream up in the Highlands, and Hannibal Buress walked by, and I was like, I am pretty positive that's Hannibal Buress. Like, checked on my phone, he was at Red Rocks that night, so I tweeted at him, like, hey, I just saw you walking down by Little Man Ice Cream in the Highlands, and he did not respond. Pretty sure I just creeped the hell out of Hannibal Buress. He was like, what is wrong with this guy?
Okay, take that story from my perspective. Yeah, from an outside perspective, listen to that story that you just said and see if you would have responded to you in that situation.
I would have. I would have said, hey, a fan, I'm going to be nice to this kid. Kid. 30. I think I'm probably older than Hannibal Buress.
It's probably true.
let's see how old Hannibal Buress is. 31. Okay, good. I'm not yet 30, and he is 31. So that's, and he'll be 32 next week.
Oh, woo. There you go.
Woo! Thank goodness.
You gonna wish him happy birthday on Twitter next week?
Hey, Hannibal. Hey, man. So this is a podcast where we talk Colorado Rockies baseball, which we have not mentioned through the first like 10 minutes of it.
No, we have not. Sorry, guys.
But welcome aboard, Tyler Mon, Anthony Masterson, episode number 33 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, and it is good to be back with you. It is our first podcast of 2015, the old calendar year, and lots gone on. Not like a lot of big stuff, but a lot of stuff has gone on.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah. No guests today. It's just going to be me and Anthony spitballing. We're going to talk prospect stuff. MLB.com's top 100 prospect rankings came out last night. Keith Law released his prospect rankings. Baseball Prospectus apparently has theirs out as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Rockies made a trade yesterday. We're going to talk some about that. We are also going to talk about the trade that they will not be making, as it appears right now, or trades, as Jeff Breidich said last week. Very, very unlikely that the Rockies deal either Carlos Gonzalez or Troy Tulowitzki moving toward the 2015 season. So it looks as if that is off the table right now.
Yeah, so shut up, Mets Twitter.
Yeah, Mets Twitter. And I don't know, whoever's been clamoring for cargo. I don't know.
Nobody
Rangers
really
Twitter. Like... Yeah, I don't know. It's weird, right? Like, you would think that the market would be decent. Maybe not great for him based on the injury and, you know, the fact that he's plays a little bit easier position to fill, but... It's strange how there hasn't been any discussion about that at all.
No, none that I've seen, at least. That's got any kind of traction whatsoever.
Yeah, a little bit weird. The Rockies did make a trade yesterday. We'll talk about that. Rockies, as of a couple of weeks ago, were reportedly shopping Charlie Blackmon. The Braves, Cubs, Rangers, and Orioles were among the teams listed in possible trade scenarios for that. There was also a report that the Rockies are going to try to turn Willian Rosario into a first baseman or an outfielder.
Yeah, stick him in center. That'll work.
Yeah, why not? Exactly. Yeah. It's not like there's much ground to cover. let's go. I guess let's go with the big news. Not huge news, but the news of the day, since there have not been many roster moves as of late for the Rockies, but they did make a deal yesterday acquiring right-handers David Hale and Gus Schlosser from the Braves.
Schlosser.
In exchange for catchers Jose Briseño and Chris O'Dowd. Jason Aquino was designated for assignment with that deal yesterday. David Hale is probably the guy who Rockies fans will maybe be a little bit more familiar with. Made 45 appearances for the Braves last season. Six of those were starts, a 3.30 ERA and 87 in the third innings. So he's probably the guy who you would think would be the frontliner of these two who have been, brought in. But it definitely,
you look at the numbers. No, the ERA looks nice, but the fielding independent pitching was a full run higher at 4.31, and that's due to the fact that Hale doesn't strike out very many guys. Just, was it 44 strikeouts and 87 and a third, and he walked 39? That's about a 1-to-1 K to walk ratio. That's not very impressive, though. What he does well is get ground balls, a 56% ground ball rate last year, so they're trying to do the ground ball thing again, which, you know, has proven to be somewhat of fool's gold for the Rockies. It's if you can pitch, you can pitch in Denver. It doesn't matter if you can get ground balls or not. But, you know, they've had success with ground ball pitchers in the past, and this is what they want to go to again.
The Rockies also bring in Schlosser, who did not have a great start to his major league career last year. Debuted a 26-year-old, 7.64 ERA and 15 appearances that totaled 17 and two-thirds innings pitched. So not
sounds like
great.
Tiger Woods' latest round on the course.
Hi-oh! Timely reference. Nicely done.
I bet that one's going to hold up.
The Rockies, they ship out Jose Briseño, who was an organization all-star on MILB.com last year, which I remember because I wrote that story. Briseño had a really good season with...
Name dropper.
It doesn't really count when you're dropping your own name. That's the only reason that I remembered his name is really what
don't
I was
saying. Don't
you know
saying. Who I am?
Briseño had a really good season last year for Class A Asheville. Threw out 44% of potential base stealers against him. He was 21 in the South Atlantic League, posted a slash line of 283, 336, 476. And when I saw the trade go down, that was the only reason I remembered it. I was like, wait a minute, I think Briseño was the catcher on that team that I picked for the organization All-Stars. And he had a hell of a year in an organization that is desperately in need of catchers who can have hell of a year at any level. Obviously, Chris O'Dowd, the other player who was shipped off to the Braves in this deal, was the son of former Rockies general manager Dan O'Dowd. So,
snipping that cord.
So there goes that awkward awkward reporting to camp in February, and you know, acquired by an organization that is very familiar with his father. So that is the one sort of big trade, not even really sort of big. It's the one trade for the Rockies.
It's somewhat. I mean, yeah, David Hale gave up only 5 home runs last year in those 87 and a third. So, you know, from Jeff Breidich's point of view, I'm guessing they wanted a guy who could fill in the bullpen and who has starting experience in the minor leagues, as David Hale does. He hasn't done it since 2013. He was pretty much just a reliever last year for the Braves. Didn't make 6 starts, but he has starting experience. So if you want to try to throw him in the rotation at the very back end, you can see what works there. If not, you can make him like a long man in the bullpen, but... You know, he keeps the ball in the park if they want a double play. You know, he obviously has the tools to make it happen. But you know, I don't like giving up a young catcher like that who was starting to come around, especially in the minor leagues, even though he was a few years away from Denver for sure. But considering you don't really have a catcher you're looking forward to in the future right now, to giving up a guy like Jose Briseño is a little bit interesting.
The... Rockies, you know, obviously bullpen depth is always an issue, so that's kind of the one highlight here, I guess, is that you require a couple of guys who could probably be in that spot. Now, Nick Roque, our good pal of the Denver Post, did note that David Hale could have a chance to get a rotation spot, or would be given that opportunity, likely in camp. We'll see how that shakes out. The Rockies did lock up one more piece of bullpen depth, a one-year deal with Adam Ottavino, an arbitration-avoiding deal, $1.3 million, according to CBS Sports' John Heyman.
Which is a steal for a guy like Ottavino.
Yeah, for a guy like Adam Ottavino, former first-round pick of the Cardinals. He requested $1.475 million for 2015. The Rockies offered him $1 million, and they agreed at $1.3 million, so basically right down the middle.
Listen, if Boone Logan's getting like $5 million a year, come on, $6 million a year.
Very good point.
Come on, Ottavino, shoot higher, man.
So the bullpen is taking shape for 2015. One guy who we really thought could have a chance to be in the mix for a rotation spot in 2015 may not be. Left-handed prospect Tyler Anderson, who had a fantastic year last year, was a Texas League Pitcher of the Year, one of the top prospects in the organization, and who has always battled injury issues, will be a limited participant in spring training because of a still problematic injury to his left elbow. That, according to Patrick Saunders of the Denver Post this week, Rockies confirmed on Thursday that he will not be ready to pitch when pitchers and catchers begin spring training workouts on February 21st in Scottsdale. They report on the 19th they'll begin workouts on the 21st. Anthony, give us some of the background on what happened with this last season and your thoughts.
Well, the interesting thing that I gleaned from Saunders' article was, you know, we had a lot of discussion last year on Twitter about Rockies and their injuries and the training staff, and how a lot of people on Twitter think that a lot of the reason why the Rockies become so injured all the time is because of how they're taken care of by Keith Duggar and the staff and all the way up and down the minor league system. And what I thought was the most interesting piece from this Saunders article, from the very, very last paragraph, it says, Anderson is under the care of Dr. Elliot Schwartz, a bone specialist based in Northern California, who has treated other athletes who have stress fractures, which is what Anderson has. According to Keith Duggar, Schwartz is the one who recommended that the Rockies take a conservative approach in bringing Anderson back. And obviously, the conservative approaches, which we've seen for a lot of other players like Cargo and Tulo, where they have injuries that seem minor at first and they're considered day-to-day, and then they end up missing 2-3 months. You know, we've seen that blow up in the Rockies' faces before, and now that last line of the article saying that it was this doctor, this bone specialist, who recommended the Rockies take the conservative approach this time. I find that very, very intriguing to see who really had the final say in that, because clearly you have to imagine that the final say would have come down to somebody who's not some doctor who is not a part of the organization, correct? So you have to imagine that somebody within the organization was going to make that final call, and apparently the conservative approach, once again, did not work.
What I find interesting about this is I'm not familiar with this type of injury. I mean, you hear a lot about a torn UCL in the elbow, or rotator cuff issue in the shoulder, or a labrum issue, or something like that. But a stress fracture in the elbow seems like a pretty difficult thing to get around. I mean, I don't know exactly what the situation. Right. He suffered it initially in 2013 while he was in Modesto, the Advanced A affiliate of the Rockies, but last year was fantastic. 7-4, 1.98 ERA. He struck out 106 and he walked 40 in 23 starts. After the All-Star break, when you would presumably think that this was getting worse or it was getting more sore or whatever it is, 4-1, 1.01 ERA and 11 starts. So he was fantastic late in the season, but then the elbow soreness started to come on and they shut him down in the playoffs. So I think it's worrisome in that he seemed to pitch the entire season and rest has not healed that, or at least gotten him back to a position where he feels healthy over the few months of the offseason.
Right. And the club added them to, or added Anderson to the 40-man roster as well to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. And they let a guy like Daniel Winkler go, who was coming back from an injury, Tommy John surgery. And so it was probably, if you have to think about it, probably an either-or situation with Anderson and Winkler, and they chose Anderson to protect him. And I wonder if they knew at that time how severe this injury actually was.
Kind of a really tough thing to see. I mean, the Rockies, obviously, with some higher touted prospects in John Gray and Eddie Butler coming up. But Tyler Anderson, before Gray and Butler, he was kind of the guy. I mean, they drafted him first round out of the University of Oregon, a left-handed guy, really looked like he could be a frontline starter, maybe not a one in a rotation, but he could be a number two or number three starter as his career started to progress. And last year, it seemed like he had finally kind of reclaimed that prospect status. And now that seems to be, maybe not for naught, but it seems to be very much on the fence. The Rockies moved Juan Nicasio off the 40-man roster to add Tyler Anderson. Of course, they designated him for assignment, then later traded him. So Anderson's occupying a spot on the 40-man that now seems to be very much in limbo because you don't really know how long this is going to go on for him. And that's a big bummer. I mean, even if he didn't get a spot in the rotation right out of spring training, he would have been one of the guys in the mix to make his debut this year.
Yeah, he would have been one of the first up from Albuquerque. Almost said the Springs.
But weird. The other day, the Sky Sox Twitter account posted a photo of one of the sausages from the sausage races at Miller Park in Milwaukee holding a Sox the Fox stuffed animal at like Brewers Fest, and I was like,
"That's
weird. So bizarre."
It's like they've taken the Springs for ransom.
Yeah,
and they're showing us like these pictures.
If you want Sox back, here's what you're gonna do.
Yeah, it's like the Brewers are ISIS.
Dr. Elliot Schwartz, by the way. The Brewers are ISIS. You're a horrible person. Dr. Elliot Schwartz is the guy who was the doctor in this case. He's treated other athletes with stress fractures. He's based in Northern California. And it is interesting, as Anthony noted, it is pretty interesting that the training staff kind of turned it over to a specialist and said, what you think we should do with this is the route that we will go. So it gives you a little bit of confidence because, hell, if I had a stress fracture, I would want to go to a specialist who has dealt in the same realm before. And if he says be conservative with it, I'll be conservative with it. I mean, that's, you know, that gives me a little bit more confidence, I think, than I otherwise would have had, especially given the way the training staff has kind of garnered its reputation as of late.
Yeah, and do you remember last summer when we were having these debates back and forth on Twitter with people and talking about the training staff and how they should fire Duggar, and obviously there are a lot of problems and miscommunications with how they treat issues and how they perceive those issues to be right off the bat. You know, like I said, guys like, oh, it's just a day-to-day thing for Tulo and he's out for 3 months, you know, and we would talk to people like on the Denver Post who work with the team every day, like our buddy Nick Groke or Hockman. And they would say no, flat out vehemently deny anything was wrong with Keith Duggar. They would stick up for him, say it's not Duggar's fault. These things just keep happening. You know, they were very much staunchly in defense of Keith Duggar and the Rockies training staff. And I wonder if there's going to be any kind of fallout from this with Anderson's injury.
It's a very strange situation right now because you're looking at a you know, Dan Winkler gets Tommy John. You think, all right, a year from now he'll be back. But this, I would think, probably gives you a little bit of pause in that it's not a common thing. It's not a situation that you see very often. And with that, you don't really know the timetable of what it is going forward for Tyler Anderson. And it's such a bummer because it comes off of his best professional season. I think that is the biggest disappointment. Had
Texas
it been,
League Pitcher of the Year. Yeah.
Right. Had it been this time last year, you know, I obviously you're going to be disappointed, but you have seen that before. You've seen the struggles with injuries before. Last year, it looked like Tyler Anderson had finally taken that big step forward, and he was in the mix. And now, all of a sudden, you don't know when you're going to have him healthy. So that's the biggest disappointment out of all of this. I think, you know, the Rockies went into last year with a large contingent of prospects who could have made giant leaps on the pitcher's mound, and really none of them did it except for Tyler Anderson, and now Anderson's not going to be around for at least the first part of this season. John Gray didn't have a great season. I mean, good season, but wasn't dominant necessarily. From time to time he was, but not on a consistent basis. Eddie Butler had, you know, made his major league debut, but did not really take anybody by storm. Suffered the injury, obviously, in his first big league start, and then just wasn't really the same toward the end of the season. Kyle Freeland, you can make the argument, broke out. I mean, it was his first professional season, so we'll get more of a beat on him as the season goes along. But Tyler Anderson was really the guy, and now you're not going to see him for a while.
Yeah, it was he and Winkler who had really stepped up the first couple of months of the season, and then Anderson, obviously, throughout the rest as Winkler got hurt. But yeah, everybody seemed to either plateau or take a step back among Rockies pitching prospects, except for those two guys. And now they're both gone for the foreseeable future, Winkler with the Braves, and now Anderson for who knows. He will still be in camp and doing, right, like PFPs, which is, I thought, was very interesting, but he will not be pitching it at all, at least at the very beginning of spring training.
And that's it. What is so important about getting in PFP work?
Yeah, like, right?
Like, all right, we know you can't throw, but get out there and field the
get
rest
out there
of
and field a weak ground ball hit back at you. Like, okay.
All right, guys. Whatever. The Major League Baseball MLB Pipeline Top 100 Prospect Rankings came out yesterday.
If you could call them that. Let's be honest here. It's a very uninspiring list.
You're an uninspiring list.
It's not very nice.
I am surprised that the top overall prospect in baseball is still Byron Buxton. I would have thought that Chris Bryant would have overtaken him, but MLB.com lists the Twins outfielder still as their top prospect in all of the minor leagues. No Rockies player checks in the top 10. Highest ranked Rockies prospect is John Gray, who is ranked number 16 going into this season. Gray is one of four Rockies prospects who check in on this list. Eddie Butler is at number 35 overall. Obviously, Butler had a season last year that was sort of up and down, but he did make his major league debut, and it looks like healthy going forward toward this season. This should be kind of when we see he and Gray really on the doorstep. And then David Dahl and Kyle Freeland, who come in at number 59 and number 60 overall. But that's it for the Rockies in terms of the top 100 for MLB.com. We also saw Keith Law's prospect list released. Baseball Prospectus, we've heard, as their top 100 out. But yeah, it's kind of funny to see how all of these different organizations rank all these different guys in so many different ways.
Yeah, and it's weird, the MLB.com one, we our good buddy Ryan Parker, our Rymel Tapia truther on Ryan Parker, he was shocked that, one, Rymel Tapia is not in the top 100 at all, and that David Dahl was not in the top 10 outfielders in minor league baseball. You know, he said Dahl might be one of the top three or four outfielders in all of the minors, and he wasn't even ranked in the top 10 in MLB.com. He had a lot about it. Keith Law, he had six Rockies in his top 100. He had John Gray at 22, Dahl at 27, Butler at 33, Ryan McMahon cracking in at number 50, Rymel Tapia at 68, and Kyle Freeland just under the century mark at 99. And Baseball Prospectus, according to Purple Row, put out their top 100 today. They have Gray at 13, Dahl at 24, Tapia at 45, so three in the top 50 there, according to Baseball Prospectus. Eddie Butler, 64, Kyle Freeland at 76, and Ryan McMahon at 100.
It's a good list. I mean, yeah. I think of all the lists,
six guys in the top 100?
You would want to be happiest with the Baseball Prospectus list, and I think that you probably are out of all those rankings. But yeah, it's, you know, what I think is so fascinating about this is that the mainstream sources don't seem to be as high on the guys that the kind of baseball-specific sources are. I mean, MLB.com, they're prospect rankings seem to be more traditional than what Baseball Prospectus gives you when they love a guy like Tapia and a guy like Dahl and Ryan McMahon, who, you know, I think somewhat flies under the radar now, especially because he's playing a position that's going to be occupied here for a while to come with Nolan Arenado.
I mean,
but
Keith Law had him at 50.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a top 50 prospect.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. I think that, you know, this is the year. I think we were cautiously hopeful going into last year that we would see John Gray, we would see Eddie Butler, we would see these guys really, those two especially, arrive at the major league level, and we would see big jumps forward from these other prospects. Kyle Freeland wasn't in the organization at that point, but David Dahl had a great year. Tapia has adjusted. He's kind of moved all around position-wise. Even Rosel Herrera, who changed position, he's been in the outfield. Those guys did pretty well, but now I think is going to be the start of the next few seasons in which we really see either these guys make an impact at the major league level by play, or they make an impact at the major league level by being currency, by being chips that can be dealt away for something else. So that's what 2015 brings. This is the year for Gray and Butler. It has to be. And I think we would have said this is the year for Gray, Butler, and Anderson had we not been dealt that chip so far. But this has to be that year. I mean, everybody's been waiting on them at least for a year, if not for two. And, you know, people who are in tune with what's going on in the organization, maybe a little bit longer than that. But this is when it really feels like some of these guys are going to start to break through and make an impact at the major league level.
Yeah, I wouldn't bury those two guys if they don't live up to expectations this year yet, only on account of the fact that they're still so young. I mean,
true.
Gray is still like 11 years old, as is Eddie Butler.
So Gray grows a sweet young man's facial hair.
Yes. So if they don't live up to expectations this year, I wouldn't say, oh, well, their careers are over at this point, just because they have youth and age on their side. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think this is the year where you expect those two guys who have been in the higher levels of the minor leagues for the last two seasons and even cracking the majors like Eddie Butler did last year, you want them this year to take and become, at the very least, major league regulars. Guys you can count on every fifth day to come in and give you a solid effort.
Oh,
but,
man.
Yeah. I think it's very good to see that the top six on the Rockies' top 10 list on Baseball Prospectus crack the top 100. You know, Gray, Dahl, Tapia, Butler, Freeland, and McMahon.
It is difficult to not get excited about seeing those guys. You know, like even yeah. Kyle Freeland at this point, who you're probably not going to see for a while, it's very difficult to not get excited about the idea of seeing Kyle Freeland, even at the upper levels of the minors. I mean, presumably Freeland's going to go to Modesto, if not to Tulsa, this year with the way he was so dominant. He was 1-0 with a 1.56 ERA and 5 starts for Grand Junction in the rookie-level Pioneer League. And then when he jumped up to Asheville in full-season Class A, he was even better there. 5 starts for the Tourists, a 2-0 record, a 0.83 ERA, a 0.83 whip, and a 179 opponent's average. He struck out 18, he walked 4. So Freeland, conceivably, if they wanted to challenge him and really push his development, they could throw him into Double-A and see how he goes in the Texas League. But it really makes you excited to see where these guys go. That being said, as people who watch the Rockies, then you tinge that with, I don't even know if you can call it cautious optimism. Maybe you call it cautious pessimism, in that you don't really know what's going to happen here. But this is a season that has a lot written on it for a lot of these guys. David Dahl is going to have to make the move up. He's going to have to be in Tulsa. He's going to have to. I've said that like 5 times, haven't I?
You have said you've said Tulsa like 5 times. Yeah.
Not the Texas League. No, New Britain.
No.
In the
New
Eastern
Britain.
League. That's so weird. The other
day,
I was interviewing.
You caught yourself first.
I was interviewing a Twins prospect the other day and said something about making the move up to Double-A, and I was like, Chattanooga, which is really weird to say for the Twins. But I mean, these guys have to start making those big steps, and it makes you very excited to see what they can do in the Eastern League, to see what some of the younger guys can do in the California League, and to see if guys like Gray and Butler make developmental steps in AAA Albuquerque rather than just coming straight up to the big leagues. Do they need that little bit of time against the more seasoned guys that they're going to see at the AAA level in the PCL, or what that next step is for them?
I mean, could we see David Dahl going the Jock Peterson route
right.
that the Dodgers employed, where they put him in AAA Albuquerque all season, and then they let him just destroy the PCL? And then this year coming into the season, you have to imagine that Peterson's going to be the starting center fielder going forward for the Dodgers. So that they gave him a cup of coffee last year after putting him down in AAA all season, and now he's going to be ready to join that Dodgers lineup pretty much from day one, I would have to imagine.
They do still have like 65 outfielders on that roster.
Exactly. But
even though I feel like they got rid of 65 outfielders, they still have 65.
They still have, yeah. No, for Freeland, since he's only 21 years old right now, he's going to be turning 22 in May. I would not be surprised if they start him at Asheville again, only for, you know, a few starts to make sure that just to make sure that, you know, he's, you know, it wasn't smoke and mirrors last year. It was only 21 innings at Asheville last year, and considering his age, he'll be right around his age group. But you know, if they want to bump him up one more level and see what he can do, if he's as advanced as they think he is, then yeah, probably start him in Modesto this year. But it would not shock me if they put him at Asheville just for a couple of starts and then bumped him up at least to Modesto and let him spend the majority of the season there.
Interesting. Interesting take, Anthony Masterson.
It's not really a hot take. It's just
it's not too hot.
Yeah,
it's a lukewarm take.
Yeah, it's like a simmering take.
But that's where I think we're most excited for this season is, like, you know what you've got for the most part in the guys who are going to be returning as far as, you know, what you have in Nolan Arenado. Now, you've seen his sample size expanded out over a long enough period of time. You know that he is a very, very good, very good third baseman.
Could be an all-star, yeah.
You know the caveats with Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez. We will see now what the outfield looks like if Charlie Blackmon ends up being a trade piece, if Brandon Barnes ends up being a trade piece. We'll see kind of how that shakes out. Michael Kadire is gone now, so the outfield's going to look a little bit different. But you know who these guys are going forward.
Yes.
Especially because we haven't seen a whole lot of change. I mean, Nick Hundley is in town now, and
woo!
And Michael McHenry will be back, and who knows what they're going to do with Willene Rosario at this point. But you pretty much know what you're getting. So where that leaves you, as an observer of the Rockies or as a Rockies fan, is excited for these guys who are in the pipeline right now. And with that, I think it's kind of an interesting story that we saw last week from Fangraphs. Paul Swidan wrote a piece titled "The Rockies is a 2015 Sleeper Team." And this was pretty interesting because, well, first of all, it seems a little bit, maybe not contradicted, but the 2015 projected standings from Fangraphs have the Rockies as the second worst team in baseball.
Baseball Prospectus has the same thing. They have only the Phillies with a worse record than the Rockies.
So they're, well,
in
not,
the National League.
Yeah. In the National League. So they're not exactly, you know, projecting huge things. But Fangraphs says, this column from Paul Swidan says that they are one of those teams that could finish in the 76-79 win bracket. And if a couple things go your way and you win 83-86 games, that's enough to get a playoff berth now. I mean, that's enough in a lot of ways to make that second wild card spot. But it was pretty interesting. And the keys that were given for this, Tyler Matzek continuing to do what he did toward the end of the season, Eddie Butler and John Gray obviously staying healthy. And then what I thought was really interesting was that Paul threw in Jairo Diaz. And Diaz was the Rule 5 pick who has done basically nothing but just shove in his baseball career
so far.
He was
the Josh Rutledge trade.
Or the Josh Rutledge trade, that's correct, and was part of a very difficult league to pitch in the California League last year with the Inland Empire 66ers and the Angels organization, and was very, very good. 2-3, 4.78 ERA. Your ERA is always going to be high in the Cal League. Then bumped up, that was in 29 appearances, made the jump to the Texas League with the Arkansas Travelers in AA, and was outstanding there in 27 games. All of them in relief, his total last season of 56 appearances. And then he made his major league debut and was pretty good in 5 games for the Angels. So that was kind of an interesting thing to throw in there because the Rockies seemingly have always needed that one guy out of the bullpen to come out and just be good whenever he gets the ball. 9 days out of 10 when he gets the ball, he has to be good. And I thought it was interesting that Diaz was the guy who was thrown out there as one of the keys to this season.
You don't see a lot of guys with his stuff with the Rockies. He's got a guy that throws 97 to 100 miles an hour, and the Rockies haven't really had that. Well, we've gone through that ad nauseum on this podcast. The Rockies don't have those guys in the bullpen that can come in and get a strikeout when needed, and that's so important in a place like Coors Field where you need to be able to miss bats consistently. They think that Jairo Diaz can be that guy, and I see why they like the trade so much. Struck out 31% of the batters he faced last year, when you're throwing 98, 99 miles an hour, like that can make you a very, very integral part of any bullpen, much less one in Colorado where they need that kind of arm.
It's going to be it's going to be very reliant, I think, this season on whether or not the bullpen can avoid just those giant dumps. Just like there were stretches last season where the bullpen looks out,
just
especially
Andy
at the
Dufresne
beginning of the year. Exactly. And then swimming through a river of sewage. And then everybody at the same time just fell off a cliff. And you can't ask Adam Ottavino to go out every single day. And when they did, it turned ugly. Rex Brothers, this is one of the best lines in this piece from Fangraphs. Based on the idea of random variation, it says, quote, last year at this time, the Orioles were a 78-win team. Stuff happens, and it's been a while since good stuff happened to the Rockies. Maybe LaTroy Hawkins really pimps out the final season of his subtly awesome career. Maybe Rex Brothers remembers how to pitch.
Yeah.
And then there's more. But, I mean, that's basically it. Like, all of these guys seemingly at the same point, Rex Brothers is kind of a season-long or year-and-a-half-long disemboweling, I guess, of his performances on the mound. But
just a lot of just poop metaphors, huh? Just a lot of
Yeah, it's very fitting in a lot of ways. But that's something that this team has to be able to avoid, that just everybody goes off the rails at the same time. That can't happen. And so if you think a guy like Diaz might be the key to that, that's huge. That's
sure.
Huge if you can throw that guy out there 3 out of every 5 or 6 days and have him be effective.
I know. I like the first reasoning why Paul Swiden thinks the Rockies could be one of those surprise teams is here's Tyler Matzek. You know, we were championing Tyler Matzek from the beginning last year. We were there from the beginning, man.
We were the original Tyler Matzek hipsters.
We were Tyler Matzek hipsters. Like, you guys, you know, we liked him before he was cool. And clearly, you guys don't understand.
You guys don't get it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, honestly, though, you know, I wouldn't admit this being a Tyler Matzek hipster, but I kind of liked his later stuff better.
You know, his later stuff was good.
Yeah.
Last year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you look at it, his strikeout rate jumped up in each month he was in the majors. You know?
It was good. It's tough to say that since we were on him so early. Like, you don't want to like the late stuff.
His old stuff was great. Like, his old stuff was great. I love, like, 12 walks per nine. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of
It's actually not a bad band name, 12 walks per nine.
12 walks per nine.
It's a pretty solid name for a band. Somebody send us in music for the next episode of the podcast by a band named 12 Walks Per Nine.
Yeah, and then, make your first single Tyler Matzek. Just make that the name of the track. Like Puig Destroyer.
But that's, no, I agree. I mean, I think that's a big thing.
Yeah, and if he becomes that guy and can be the guy who strikes out 8 to 9 batters per nine innings while maintaining an ERA from 3.50 to 4.50, which you have to realize is a large variation, but at the same time, it's probably what you can expect from a guy at Coors Field. But if he can get that strikeout rate up, he can get that ERA down, and man, he could be a top performer in this rotation. But also at the same time, you know, we mentioned staying out of the trainer's room, of course, in that article, which is always the caveat with the Rockies. But you know, I still go back to that reasoning Drew Kreisman gave us at the beginning of last year, where, you know, if the Rangers lose Prince Fielder and Shin-Soo Chu and Yu Darvish, they're gonna suck. If the Rays lose David Price and Evan Longoria, they're gonna suck. If the Rockies lose Tulo and Cargo, they're probably gonna suck. But you know, Swiden talks about Tulo, Cargo, and Jolie Chacin and mentions that two of those three gave the Rockies virtually nothing last year, which is true.
Yeah.
And Tulo only gave them a half season. Yes, it was an MVP caliber half season, but it was a half season nonetheless. So if Chacin comes back healthy and pitches the way he can, which, by the way, Jolie Chacin is like 26.
Yeah. Can you believe
that? Isn't
that
amazing?
That, like, really is pretty remarkable.
That dude has been around for so long, and he is 26 years old.
He just turned 27 on January 7th.
Yeah, just
but that is, that's young, because he's been around forever. He made his Major League debut at 21.
Yeah.
In 2009, he pitched in 9 games for the Rockies in that playoff year. And, yeah, ever since then, this is what worries you about him. In 2 out of the last 3 seasons, he's made 14 appearances or fewer. But when he has been healthy, He has been very, very good. He had an ERA of 3.28 in 28 games, 21 starts back in 2010, 3.62 in 31 starts in 2011, and 3.47 in 31 starts in 2013. So we know that he has the ability to be effective. Does he have the ability to stay healthy? Million-dollar question for everybody that we see on this team now.
I just think it's amazing that in 2013, when he had that 3.47 ERA with the Rockies, that his FIP was the exact same number. It was 3.47.
Which is so weird.
Which is
so
impossibly weird. Hard to do in this field, especially when you're a guy who doesn't strike out everybody. He had less than 6 Ks per 9 that year, and yet his ERA and his FIP were the exact same. That is amazing.
It's a statistical anomaly.
That was his crazy, crazy year where he allowed almost no home runs. Where he allowed like, you know, 0.5 home runs per 9. He only allowed 11 home runs the entire season. In 200 innings.
He's one of those guys who you sort of forget how good he is until you're watching him. And they're like, oh, yeah.
Like Jorge De La Rosa. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Chacin's like, actually got something here. The Rockies, I mean, there's going to be from now until eternity or until an ownership change or a training staff change or something, they're going to be qualified with the phrase, as long as they can stay healthy, which every team to some
that's the caveat for every team
has to deal with, but what better teams don't have to deal with is depth quite as much. When you're a team like the Rockies and you're doing everything on kind of a razor's edge in terms of your depth, that's why it's so much more of an obliterating feeling when you see a big name go down or a big producer go down, because you don't have somebody waiting in the wings to take that spot who can be replacement level for what you're going to be missing out on.
And you know, we go back to the Swiden article, but he actually mentioned depth and wiggle room as one of the key proponents for the Rockies this year, saying that Breidich has done his best to quietly line up contingencies. And if, you know, there's still wiggle room to add a veteran pitcher in free agency if they need to, but at the same time, they also do have, of course, many prospects they can dangle if they do find the right fit for some kind of major league veteran or young controllable piece that can make them a better team and give them the push toward a possible playoff berth in the next 2 seasons. So he says that they've done a good enough job to get the cupboard stocked. Now it's just a matter of using them to the best of their abilities, I guess.
The Rockies signed a couple of free agents to minor league deals this week, according to Baseball America's transactions list, and they are two very familiar names to Rockies fans. Right-hander Rafael Betancourt, who pitched in the Rockies organization for the last handful of seasons and did so last year after having Tommy John surgery at 38 years old. He will be 40 this coming April. He posted a 4.66 ERA in 19 and a third innings between Grand Junction and the rookie-level Pioneer League in AAA Colorado Springs. But Betancourt is a guy who is going to take longer to come back, presumably from Tommy John, because of his age. And if you can get some value out of him, you know, you're not really risking much by signing him to a minor league deal.
Oh, Betancourt's used to taking longer to do a lot of things. So
yeah, that is the truth.
I think he's
you know what's going to be fascinating? If he makes a minor league roster and he goes to New Britain or he goes to Albuquerque with a pitch clock, that's going to be a nightmare for Rafael Betancourt.
That is Jim Leland and Ozzie Guillen's wet dream, is seeing Rafael Betancourt with a pitch clock and getting balls called on.
The Rockies also signed, remember Omar Quintanilla, University of Texas legend?
Of course, Quintanilla. Q.
The other Q, not Quentin McCracken. Quintanilla, 5 years he's been away from the organization and is coming back. He has played parts of 8 seasons in the major leagues, and you know, it's not like the Rockies are risking anything. Minor league deals are minor league deals. You throw them out like candy, and they don't really risk anything. If you can get anything out of, I don't really expect much of anything out of Omar Quintanilla other than being organizational filler maybe at Albuquerque, but you get something out of Betancourt, then you get something out of Betancourt. He's been one of the, when you look at the numbers, Rafael Betancourt has been one of the best pitchers in the history of the franchise. Absolutely. That's how good Betancourt has been when he has been good.
Betancourt is awesome. Like, speaking of subtly awesome, like LaTroy Hawkins, Rafael Betancourt is just awesome.
Yeah. He doesn't even need the subtlety.
I'm not sure he's even thrown a ball in his career.
Despite the fact that he's so slow, which you would think would suggest subtlety, but you would think that, not with him. The Rockies also signed catcher Lance Rimel, who was released by the Cubs a couple of weeks ago. He's another minor league depth kind of guy. So they're filling everything out. That's what you see now. We're getting close to the start of spring training. We're now 2.5-3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting to Scottsdale. And, you know, this is the time when you start saying, all right, what do we need and where? And you pick up warm bodies who are out there and you throw them into the mix. And more than anything, I think rather than thinking like, oh, my God, they signed Omar Quintanilla, what are you thinking? More than anything, when you sign a guy like Omar Quintanilla, I think you should think, oh, my God, spring training is so close.
Yes. And yet James Shields still is unsigned out there.
Yeah, right? And that, by the way, we for a while started to think, man, maybe we called this right. Like, maybe we were actually right that the Rockies are that weird mystery team that James Shields got a whole boatload of money thrown at him from and doesn't want to play for. The Rockies did say to Patrick Saunders of the Post that they have not made an offer to James Shields.
Right.
Now, that being said, I guess that doesn't really mean anything. I mean, no. At this point, you could say, like, no, we haven't made an offer. But there's a chance that it's still out there. It's probably not. It's very unlikely. But the one thing that Jeff Breidich said was we need to address starting pitching. And they haven't done it yet. So.
No, they have not. And now with the Tyler Anderson news, that might put a few more things in motion. If Tyler Anderson, you can't count on him at least for the initial part of the 2015 season. And who knows for the rest of it. Then, yeah, you may need to start looking at other options outside the organization to see what you can find.
The Rockies also made a move on the minor league coaching staff, which was a little bit odd and late. This came very, very late. This is just 9 days ago. Steve Merriman, who was going to be the pitching coach for AA New Britain, not Tulsa. New Britain's in Connecticut. That is the Eastern League, not the Texas League. Don't listen to me
for half
of the show. Steve Merriman left the organization due to personal reasons, so that made a lot of pieces fall into different places. So rather than guys going to the places where they thought they were going to be, they're now moving all around. Dave Burba is going to go be the pitching coach with New Britain.
Good old Dave
Brandon
Burba.
Brandon Emanuel will be the guy for Class A Advanced Modesto in the California League, and Doug Jones, who is a five-time All-Star, 303 career saves, will go to the Rockies' short-season Class A team in the Northwest League in Boise, Idaho. So that was a little late, too, and that was something that we didn't get to talk about last week when it happened. We talked about it a little bit on Twitter, but you don't really see that much this close to the season, so we certainly hope that everything is okay with Steve Merriman, who had to leave the organization for personal reasons, but kind of crazy. Doug Jones, this will be his first season as a coach in professional baseball. He's been with a college in San Diego for the last 5 years and was a minor league assistant in the Diamondbacks organization for 3 years from 2006 to 2008. So that was kind
of
interesting.
Dave Burba pitched for a lot of those good Indians teams in the 90s.
Dave Burba.
He was the starting pitcher for the game against the Mariners on August 5th, 2001, when the Indians were down 14-2 in the seventh
and came back to win that game 15-14.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was the starting pitcher.
You know what I've always found fascinating, too, is like Dave Burba never played in the Rockies organization. To my knowledge, no, never did. He played, came up in the Mariners organization, and then he played at the major league level for the Mariners, the Giants, the Reds, the Indians, the Rangers, the Brewers, and then went back to the Giants at the end of his career. But that always fascinates me that a guy with no ties to the organization from his playing career ends up coaching in the organization.
Yeah.
That's always been really interesting to me. Although I guess you could say the same thing about it. You know, a lot of guys in a similar boat. Doug Jones.
Well,
the guy.
Yeah. Considering the Rockies and Denver sports, they always want to try to go channel the past whenever they try to find any kind of coaching vacancy or executive vacancy whatsoever. So yeah, it is interesting.
Doug Jones also has no experience with the Rockies organization, but does have experience with sweet mustaches. I wonder if he's going to keep it.
His mustache.
I wonder if he still has
point.
It.
Yeah.
He's a plus plus.
It's mustache. It's like an 80 grade mustache.
One thing that I think we wanted to cover were some Ask PDP questions, and we'll dive into them in a minute, but I wanted to dive into, and you can probably tell me because I know you have them pulled up. Somebody tweeted at us a couple of weeks ago, who is the best player in Rockies franchise history?
Yeah.
And there is a great piece up on, for me, for my money, it's Larry Walker, and it's not even close. Todd Helton, the way his career fell off toward the end of it, he is definitely a very admirable number two, but he didn't do everything the way Larry Walker did everything. Larry Walker was a five-tool guy who is a Hall of Famer, and the fact that had Larry Walker played his entire career in Montreal, he's very easily a Hall of Famer. The fact that he played the majority of his biggest years in Colorado will make him not a Hall of Famer. But there's a great story up on hallofstats.com, which is a statistically minded approach to the Baseball Hall of Fame, in which Adam Dorowski lays out a case for Larry Walker that is irrefutable in the way that he should be in the Hall of Fame. To me, he's my guy. Larry Walker has a 965 career OPS. And yes, he played at Coors Field, and yes, he played in the 90s when everything was going insane. But still, even if that doesn't happen with his career OPS, what would it be at that point? 898?
Yeah.
Like, what more do you need from Larry Walker? According to Hall of Stats, he ranks third in their Hall rating among eligible position players outside of the Hall of Fame, behind only Barry Bonds and Jeff Bagwell. He's ahead of Mike Piazza, Tim Raines, Pete Rose, and Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, I think the always the issue with Larry Walker was never his numbers. It was always the one number that was the knock on him was the amount of games played. You know, right. He had the injuries. He didn't play a long enough career at an elite level, I guess, is what people are going to look at. And if he would have stayed healthy for a few more years, maybe played one or two more years as well, who knows? The numbers could have looked a lot better. Yeah, he would have been very much much more in the conversation for Hall candidacy. Though I am very excited that he did get the requisite 5% to stay on the ballot for one more year at least. So that's great news. But yeah, that's always been the knock. It was never a talent thing with Larry Walker. It was never a numbers thing with Larry Walker. It was always the games played. Like, why didn't he play more? If he could have played more, he could have really made his case a lot better.
This is another great point from that same story. Despite all of his injury issues, he still averaged more games per season than Willie Stargell. And he had more 150-game seasons and 130-game seasons than Stargell, who played a longer career and went into Cooperstown on his first ballot. I don't think that Larry Walker is ever going to make it in.
No, as of
right now, predicting the future, according to baseballpastandpresent.com and their formula, he has about a 50-50 chance of being inducted in the future. But, man, if Larry Walker plays anywhere else and puts up even numbers that are 5 to 10% lower than what he did in Colorado, he's a surefire Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I think so. I think if he'd have put up the exact same numbers in Yankee Stadium, he'd be a Hall of Famer already.
Who is your guy? Is he your guy as best in franchise history?
I think you have to say Todd Helton. It doesn't matter that, okay, that he ended his career on somewhat of a down note, or even the last 5-6 years of his career on a down note. The first half of his career was so amazing, and he did so many things for the organization, not just offensively but defensively as well. He was able, really, until the Red Igloo Cup fiasco, he was really a model guy that people could look to as the face of the Colorado Rockies. And I think he was there long enough that putting up such great numbers at such a high level that, yes, he should be the face of the Rockies, the best player in Rockies history. Is Todd Helton.
I think I agree with you in the way that if you had to name Mr. Rocky, the guy who embodies the franchise,
right,
then it's very easily Todd Helton. If you had to name the best baseball player to put on a Rockies uniform for a lengthy period of time, to me, it's Larry Walker.
I think so. The most talented. Yeah. I think just in every possible facet. Yes. I think you're right. I think in that respect, we're looking at in that, then you got to throw Tulo in there too. I mean, obviously, that's still ongoing.
Yeah, true.
I think the two most talented people to ever put on a Rockies uniform are Larry Walker and Todd Helton, and Troy Tulowitzki. I mean, but I think just on sheer talent alone, Carlos Gonzalez has to be in there. But he's obviously been dealt with injuries as well. But when he's on his game, there's nobody better.
It's a really fun question to debate, especially because there are only a handful of candidates, so it makes it a little bit more entertaining. Like, if you're a Yankees fan, who are you going to debate? Oh, I think it was Mickey Mantle. I think it was Babe Ruth. I think it was Derek. It's way more fun when your team sucks.
I always have a huge soft spot for Andre Scalarraga as well. Huge soft spot for the Cat. He was only there for 4 years, I know, but he was the one that really brought baseball to Colorado. He put up squiffy numbers those years, and I loved him for it. He was just one of the most fun hitters to watch.
Well, let's dive into some Ask PDPs. By the way, did you just use the word squiffy?
I sure did.
What is that?
It's, you know, like, you know, it's squiffy.
Huh. Never heard of it.
So, first question from our buddy Cameron. What's your deal, Tyler?
That's the most insightful question we have ever gotten at the PDP. I'm going to give Cameron the answer that annoying kid gave in Empire Records, which is a movie that came out probably before Cameron was born.
It definitely came out before Cameron was born.
I don't have to explain myself to you, Warren.
Yeah.
Actually, I think he says I don't have to explain my art to you, Warren. When he glued the
name isn't
down.
Warren.
Who glued all these quarters to the floor? I don't have to explain my art to you, Warren.
I thought his name was Warren.
I don't have to explain my art to you, Cameron.
Warren Beatty.
But that is probably the best question I've ever been asked.
Yeah.
So there's my non-answer for it. Next!
All right, fine. Another one for Tyler. How dreamy is Anthony in person?
Here's the thing. Everybody, like, hears Anthony's voice. They're like, oh, he must be such a nice guy. Listen to his deep voice.
Hey, they didn't say nice guy. They said dreamy. And that was from Carl, by the way, at Desert Turtle.
Next to Anthony in a radio booth for 100-plus games a season, and then have him leave you at the end of the season, you would hate him like I hate him, like Craig Goldstein hates him. Dreamy? Oh, contraire.
That's not true at all. You just miss me.
Oh, contraire.
You miss me.
Oh, contraire.
I can hear it in your voice.
I did actually the other day look up trains from here to L.A. because I was like, this is the most beautiful part of the country. Like, from here, if you drove from here to the California coast, anywhere from the Canadian border to the Mexican border, it's the most beautiful part of the country. It's like, what if I like took a train? What if I went out and visited Anthony on a train? And I actually found one that I could catch like around, I don't know, like La Junta or some armpit of Colorado. And it takes you down through New Mexico and Arizona and then right to Union Station.
That would be a nice trip, actually.
Maybe I'm going to do that, pal.
Yeah, the drive from Denver to L.A., is not amazing if you go through Utah because there's a lot of nothing. Utah is a lot of nothing. There's a couple
it's
of spots
nothing,
that's
where, but it's, yeah.
There's a couple of spots there where it's really nice, like rock formations you drive through, and it's really really cool and totally freaky and alien. But for the most part, it's nothing. It's like, you know, you cross, you know, get into Vail and all that in the mountains, then you get to Grand Junction, and then you get to Vegas, and that's pretty much it. If you go actually down 25 to Albuquerque and over on
that's the way this
on 40 on I-40 is actually a very 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 nice drive going through northern Arizona, which is actually more temperate with
beautiful.
Like forests and stuff. It's not desert. You go through
Flagstaff. Yeah, it is, which is so weird.
It's a beautiful drive. I recommend that one, even though you can't really do that one in one day. It's like a 21 hour drive. Whereas going on 15 down is only 15 hours, so you can do that in one day if you want to.
Okay, gotcha. Good to know.
But anyway, to answer your question, Carl, yes, I'm very dreamy. Next.
No. Next. I didn't even bring them up, so you have to read them.
Oh,
up.
My God, you're the worst.
By the way, apparently the when we started Ask PDP, the first few times we clicked on the hashtag, there were like questions directed about the Nigerian government at some like journalist from like 2010, and I guess they're back.
Yeah, they are. There's a lot of Ask PDP questions hashtagged on Twitter that do not involve the Rockies or us blathering on at all.
That's like whenever I try to hashtag the ABL, it always suggests at ABLEG, which apparently is something having to do with like the Albuquerque legislature or the Alberta legislature.
Sweet.
In Canada. So, you're weird, Twitter. Yeah. Anyway, Ask PDP.
By the way, the who's the best player in Rockies history question was from Kyle Bishop, who's been there from the beginning.
Kyle
so
Bishop.
good for that
he
guy.
He has been.
All right,
he's
let's go to our good buddy Jake Shapiro, who is internet famous now, by the way, for creating Bill Walton Bingo. And Bill Walton was talking about it on, you know, whatever broadcast that he was doing a couple weeks ago. And they brought up the bingo card and put at Chapalicious Jake Shapiro on it.
No way! That's amazing!
No. I was even watching the Arizona-Oregon State game on Pac-12 Network last night where Bill Walton was on it, and he brought a Bill Walton bingo out of the blue.
You know what I am going to say right now, because I have to take this moment to be able to do this, for Cameron and Jake's sake, that is the biggest accomplishment in University of Colorado athletics in like 15 years.
Oh, boy.
So that's awesome. Nailed it! All right, anyway.
So anyway.
Jake, that's awesome.
So, yes, yeah. So he had a couple of questions. So 2.5 catchers, how is that going to work? And then, sub-question, Jorge De La Rosa, the Rockies' greatest pitcher of all time?
Probably. When you really look at it, probably over the span of time that he's done it and the level of effectiveness he has continued to have, he probably is. When you really put it all together, DLR is probably the guy. The catching equation is going to be really interesting because the writing is definitely on the wall for Willian Rosario right now.
Yes.
The Rockies love his bat, but they understand that dude can't get it figured out with the glove. So whether they try to move him over to first base, where does that leave you with Kyle Parker? Where does that leave you with Ryan McMahon? If you wanted to go that route, move him across the diamond, I don't know. But it seems to be that Rosario is going to be the odd man out. The problem is, as long as he's in the organization, you got to find a way to get him in the lineup because his bat has the ability to be explosive. But I would not be surprised if maybe even before the spring, we hear something about Willian Rosario either moving out from behind the plate or if they deal him away. And when they made the signing to bring Hundley in, somebody tweeted at us and said, this seems like a classic Rockies move to basically squelch all of the value that Willian Rosario would have had because now teams know that you're not desperate to get rid of him or that you are more desperate to get rid of him because you have more depth there.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're not looking at a situation where the Rockies are, you know, going to be able to call their shot in dealing him away.
You know, and Mike McHenry was great last year, put up phenomenal numbers in a reserve role, but at the same time, he has been in the big leagues for quite a few years, and he's not really profiling as a number one everyday catcher. Now, you know, a couple years ago, the Rockies had Tom Murphy, who looked like he was ready to make that jump to be one of the catchers of the future for the Rockies, but he had a tough year last year in Double-A Tulsa. And that one is in Double-A Tulsa because he was there last year where he was hurt. And didn't really get a chance to make good on his phenomenal 2013 season, where he jumped three levels, I believe. So, you know, and that's the problem you get when you trade a guy like Jose Briseño, who, I'm not saying he would have been an all-star in the future, but he had a lot of potential as a 21-year-old in Asheville as a catcher who was good defensively, could swing the bat a little bit, and you trade him away for some, you know, pitching depth that's going to help you out in the short term. And so you wonder if who's going to take that spot, because right now the Rockies' number one catcher in the organization, I guess, is still Tom Murphy, I'm assuming.
I would assume so.
Yeah, but, and, you know, they have guys like Hamlin Marte, and they have that whatever three-headed catcher Cerberus at Grand Junction last year, where they would play like Dom Nunez, Nunez and Hamlet Marte, where all those great names, where they would interchange them at catcher and then throw them in the field at other positions when they weren't catching. So if the Rockies think they have a lot of depth there, that's fine. But those guys, like I said, were in Grand Junction last year, so they're still a couple years away at the very least. So yeah, I do wonder what's going to happen the next few years, because right now, if your tandem is Rosario, who can't catch, who has regressed hitting every single year, and Mike McHenry, who is pretty much a career backup, and that's no offense to him, he's had a pretty great career, but I just don't see him as an everyday catcher.
It's you would think at one point they're going to run into a catcher that could develop into a major league catcher, but it's been almost 25 years of franchise history, and they haven't yet, except for Chris Iannetta, who they, for whatever reason, fell completely out of love with.
Yeah.
Next!
By the way, if we're looking at just straight wins above replacement for pitchers in Rockies history, Ubaldo Jimenez tops the list at 19.5 wins above replacement.
Interesting.
Yeah. The top five.
Remember good Baldo?
Yeah, man. It was amazing. And, you know, as an Indians fan, I watched it at the end of 2013 as well when they made the playoffs. Like, that, the second half of that season, he was old Baldo. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he almost single-handedly got them to the playoffs that year when they had to win, you know, whatever, you know, 13 of 15 or 10 of 12 or whatever. You know, he was
like a long time since we've seen old Baldo.
Yes. So anyway, here's the top five, just in Fangraphs wins above replacement for the Rockies. Ubaldo, Aaron Cook, Pedro Astacio, Jeff Francis, and Jason Jennings. DLR comes in at 6. 14.1 career wins above replacement.
Interesting.
Right? I was surprised he wasn't higher on that list.
How about Jason Jennings being on that list?
I think that obviously Estacio and Jennings are helped out by the fact they played in bonkers Coors Field. So
right.
their regression to the mean was going to be a lot higher because they were playing at Blurn Ballpark at that point.
Right.
So, but, you know, looking at Ubaldo and Cook and Francis, it's hard to say they weren't three of the best pitchers in Rockies history.
By the way, the lowest ERA that Jason Jennings ever produced in his Rockies career was 3.78 in 2006. Other than that, it was 4.52 in 2002. Things were insane in those years.
Yeah, but I think you look at what the Rockies have done at home, I think Jorge De La Rosa is by far the best home pitcher in Rockies history. I think that's pretty easy to say. He just knows how to pitch in Coors Field, whatever that means. And he can't pitch on the road, which whatever that means. Like, I don't understand how that works, but hey, you know, whatever. It's, if you're looking at it that way, the person who's figured out Coors Field, yeah, it's absolutely Jorge De La Rosa, 100%. But best in Rockies history, I'm not sure he's reached that yet. I mean, I think Ubaldo Jimenez, he was the first pitcher to put the Rockies on the map when it comes to looking at a pitcher for the Colorado Rockies that they were able to draft and develop themselves. Yeah, it's Ubaldo Jimenez.
Who was able to be successful.
Right. I think we forget how good Ubaldo Jimenez was when he was good. Like, he was a guy that nobody wanted to face, which for a Rockies pitcher is amazing. That doesn't happen. I mean, he had a 2.88 ERA in 2010. That was his amazing year. 2.88.
That is nuts.
As a Rockies,
that really
he threw 220
insane.
Innings that year.
Oh, I don't know if we'll ever see it again. To be perfectly honest, that's how it feels. Like you saw it happen in 2010. You were like, all right, they're starting to get this figured out. And, maybe not. Next.
From Will C. Why is Drew Soicher such an ass?
If you missed our Soicher status hashtag on the old Twitter machine.
Thanks to John Wrighty. That was great. We had a fun day with that.
That was a fun day. Yeah, there are many people who we can bitch about in the media in this town, and he is very much at the top of the list. He is quite the I don't even know what you would call Drew Soicher at this point. I've covered sporting events in this town since 2008. I have never seen Drew Soicher at a single one of them. I'm just going to leave it at that. I have never seen Drew Soicher actually attend a sporting event. I've never seen him in a locker room at Mile High. I never saw him at Dove Valley. I never saw him in the clubhouse at Coors Field. I never saw him at a Nuggets game. I never saw him in an Avalanche game. Not once. Which I guess when your entire segment revolves around, terrible bits and bobbleheads.
And Alzheimer's jokes. Don't forget Alzheimer's
jokes. Yeah, and Alzheimer's jokes. You don't really need to be there. But check your Twitter status, your Soicher status. If you are not blocked by Drew Soicher, just kidding, you're probably blocked by Drew Soicher. Next!
From our good friend in Kansas City, Mike Famosi. He should get the home hat over the road hat, right? For the Rockies.
You know, we had a lot of fun with this a couple weeks ago, and we might, even with Anthony's good pals over at Humble Monster, we might be making some t-shirts finally, which I know we talked about last year, but we might be making some PDP t-shirts with the logo that I created, which is just, it was a very basic logo that I think the Rockies should go with. I think the Rockies need to totally rebrand.
I loved that new logo. That logo you made in like 4 seconds. I thought that was a phenomenal logo. And it's easy to be tweaked, and it could be amazing. And Tyler.
Exactly. Tyler and Kirsten, a real graphic designer, could do a lot with
it. Tyler and Kirsten, who run Humble Monster, one of the best clothing companies in Denver. Go check them out. Humble Monster. They rock. They're going to go tweak that logo a little bit, see what they can do with it, have some fun with it. And we would love to make some t-shirts with them this summer and get them out to you guys, possibly put them for sale up at Coors Field, selling them outside, whatever the stands. I think that would be awesome because that logo can be really, really friggin' great.
Basically, if you didn't see it, I pretty much just put together what I think the Rockies logo should look like, which is in this state right now, you can slap the state flag on anything and it'll sell. So my idea is the state flag is a field of blue and white stripes, three of them, with a red sea and a yellow sun in the middle. And you know what shape the sun is in is a circle. So why not take the sun out, swap a baseball in, and put some mountains in front of it? It's the easiest rebrand in history. Keep the logo, whatever you want to do with the CR and the mountains and whatever, if you want to make them alternates or whatever you do. But they're so played. The pinstripes are so played. The CR logo on the hat is so played. It looks so juvenile and 90s now. They need something new. So in answer to Mike Vimosi's question, I actually am sort of partial to the road hat that has the purple bill. But God, I don't know. I can't advocate for buying any Rockies merchandise because it's so uninspired.
The only good one they come out with in the last couple of years was that new 5950 that New Era put out with the mountain logo
with the mountain
and then the baseball. Yeah, that one was great. Right. I like that hat a lot. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I was digging through my old crap in my parents' house over Christmas, and I found a Rockies hat from 1994, and I was like, "Oh, that's cool." And I looked at it, and it looks the exact same as the Rockies.
The exact same logo. So dumb. And like, it wasn't that great of a logo back then.
Not.
And I understand the Rockies' reasoning behind it. They wanted to go. They've been trying to get Major League Baseball in this town for 50 years. They thought the A's and the White Sox were coming in the 60s and the 70s, and they never came. So they wanted to act like a very classic Major League organization.
Sure.
And, you know, the Marlins sort of did the same thing. But even the Marlins have realized, like, God, this is a terrible 90s look. And to be fair, the Marlins look far superior to the Rockies. The old Marlins, teal and silver and black, their uniforms way better than the Rockies uniforms, I think.
I'm not a teal guy like you, apparently, but yes, I understand your point.
Not even necessarily the color. I just think like the logo and the word mark and everything worked better. But the Rockies are just so... What is the Rockies font? It's like Times New Roman.
Yeah,
it's like slapped on the front of those uniforms. It's like they went into like an accountant's office and they were like, I don't know, make a logo. It's just awful.
So let's use this time really quickly to implore the Rockies this season, at least for one game, do some throwbacks. Wear Denver Bears jerseys. Wear Denver
anything.
Zephyrs jerseys. Wear something. Acknowledge the history of baseball in the city of Denver, of which is a long and wonderful history. Do something. Throw your fans a bone. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I don't see why people wouldn't absolutely embrace it, why they wouldn't want to see, you know, Troy Tulowitzki wearing a Denver Zephyrs jersey, or why they wouldn't want to see Cargo in a Denver Bears hat. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't try at a minimum to embrace the past baseball in the city. Wear a Silver Bullets jersey. I don't care. Do something.
Do something to honor the Negro Leagues. One of the biggest the first integrated major baseball competition in the United States was not Jackie Robinson with the Dodgers. It was the Denver Post tournament that they held every year. And I think it was in the 30s. They invited the Kansas City Monarchs for the first time. And there was a Denver Negro Leagues team called the White Elephants. Like, you have one of the proudest baseball histories from a city that was for a very long time a non-major league city of anywhere out there. Why do you refuse to acknowledge that anything existed prior to 1993? And for that matter, why do you refuse to acknowledge that graphic design has evolved since 1993?
Yeah, listen, Chuck and Dick, I know you're listening to the podcast. I know you listen. Well, we are imploring you, please
do
something to honor the past of baseball in Denver. There's so many things to choose from. It doesn't have to be a difficult thing. It can be something done even once a year. It doesn't matter. Just do it, please.
Man,
there's so many cool things you can do.
The Brewers released their fan design t-shirts for the season. Why not do something like that? It's so easy. You're not paying anyone to do anything.
And that's the thing.
You're having fans submit ideas,
and
then you pick them and do them as giveaways. It's better than the 17th consecutive year of terrible t-shirt jerseys where you can't even spell players' names right.
And honestly, I don't understand, because Denver is such a huge hotbed for graphic design.
Exactly.
Like, there's so many small businesses, like my friends in Humble Monster. Like, they make Rockies themed shirts. They of course can't use the Rockies logos, but they make Rockies themed shirts. The Mile High Hardball shirts they made a couple years ago, I still wear those all the damn time. They're so damn cool. They made the Charlie Blackbeard shirts last year. Like, seriously, just do some kind of user submitted shirt and put it out as a giveaway this year. It will not take you that much to do. It won't cost you a lot of money, and it will give you such good PR for the community. I don't understand why they wouldn't do it. We have gone off the rails.
Great?
Here.
Yeah, we have. You know what's going to be great is when, because the Rockies were tagged in that conversation that we had on Twitter. You know what's going to be great is when they steal that logo and don't acknowledge.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'll be like that guy who had to sue the Baltimore Ravens in like 2000.
Yeah, exactly. Oh boy.
All right. Anyway.
Oh boy.
What else do we got? We've gone long today. Yeah. I didn't even realize this. We've gone very long
today. Good.
One other note. This is just a quick minor league note. The New Britain Rockcats, the new Rockies AA affiliate. The groundbreaking for their new ballpark is set for later. Actually, next month, late February. It's supposed to be open by 2016, apparently. So the Rockies could be sending their AA ball players out into a brand new ballpark by next season, which is pretty cool. And that is about all, really, in all reality. But yeah, we're going to be back a little bit more regularly over the next handful of weeks and months, and then obviously as we get into the season, we'll be back with you on a weekly basis. Again, a big thanks to our first music submission this time around, which came from our good pal Nick Stevens. Low Peaks plays us out of the show today, and all right, Anthony Masterson.
This has been some good stuff today. It's good to hear your voice again.
It's been pretty fun today. It's good to hear your voice, buddy boy. All right, dude. We'll do it again here in the next few weeks. Thanks for tuning in. Give us a follow on Twitter at PurpleDinoCast. You can email the show if you have some music or you have anything else to send in to us, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to our guys at Purple Row. Thanks to our guys at ESPN Denver for hosting the podcast for iTunes and Stitcher. Download us there, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
When I'm without you, I'm something weak. You got me begging, begging, I'm on my knees. I don't want to be needing your love. I just want to be deep in your love. It's killing me when you're away. Won't you come and put it down on me?